We're going through the Texans schedule this morning. Check it out, sportsradio610.com. We know it's tough. We knew it would be tough. The schedule is going to be really hard early. I have them going 8-8 right now, a week before the draft. What do you guys have this morning?
7-9. You take a look at that first half of the schedule, and while we want to see the Texans at maybe 3-4 with those first seven games where they are playing at the very least an average quarterback in all seven of those games, I feel like that's a 2-5 kind of stretch. And I think that if you fall into that kind of hole to begin the year, how does that change what you do the rest of the season? And what are the odds that the Texans can pull themselves out of a hole like that,
yeah,
three games below 500 like they did this past season? I just don't think it's quite in the cards, especially when you have some more difficult games later.
I'm struggling right now to figure out what I'm going to predict for Deshaun Watson. Because I think like my whole perception and my whole feel about the Texans this offseason has, I've been ignoring the upside of Deshaun Watson, Will Fuller, and Kiki QT, I think. And that's what I just don't quite know what to do with it at this point. I think Deshaun Watson is going to look more this year like his rookie year than he did last year. And that's obviously a good thing. But pre-draft, where I'm looking at these holes at offensive tackle and these holes at cornerback, I can't do better than 7-9. Post-draft, that might change. I might go up to 8-8 or 9-7. This is a much tougher. I feel the same way about this team that I did last year at the beginning of the season, which is it's very much a boom or bust team. They've got a lot of really good players at the top, and then a whole bunch of question marks at the middle and bottom of the roster. And those question marks and how they're answered could end up being a really, really good year for the Texans, but it could also be a really disappointing year for the Texans. They might be the most boom or bust team in the league, just like they were at the beginning of last season. And I don't see really a whole lot of reason for that to change. So I'm going to say 7-9 right now. But it's like pre-draft predictions are dumb.
It's hard.
So yeah. I'm not going to have any shame in revising that after we go through the draft.
Totally fair. So to recap, I have them going 8-8. Seth and Paul have them going 7-9. Despite how tough the schedule looks, I went through it and I was able to get to 8 wins without being overly optimistic. Like
right.
I actually have them starting off 2-5. And in my 8-8, I have them losing twice to Indianapolis. I have them losing to the Saints, the Chargers, one of the Carolina and Atlanta games. I have them, let's see, I have them losing once to Tennessee as well. So I haven't been overly optimistic anywhere. I do have them going on the road to Baltimore and winning because I like this defense against Lamar Jackson. That's the only area I'm really optimistic about. I was able to get to 8 without really feeling like I was stretching myself too thin.
Right. No, and I agree with you there. And again, I think if they address the needs that I hope they address in the draft, I'll put them up at 8-8. But right now, I just got to say 7-9. I think the difference between this year's team and last year's team, in this schedule especially, is if they do go 10-6 on this schedule, I'm going to feel great about them going into the playoffs. I'm going to feel, if they go 10-6 versus this schedule, and more specifically these quarterbacks, I think it's going to be a much more complete football team than it was last year. And it's very possible. I'm not sitting here being like a predicting doom for the Texans. I really think it could go a bunch of different directions because they have such skilled players at the top. But this, it's going to be a good test. It's a much more crucial regular season this year than it was last year. They have no room for error. They can't rely on the mistakes of other coaches to have a good season this year. They're going to have to go out there and earn it themselves.
And they can't get out of the gate slow. And the combination of having a secondary that's likely going to give up a lot of points and an offensive line that is going to be in a very difficult situation should the Texans be down late in the game to these offenses that are putting up points on the secondary, because everyone's just going to rush Deshaun Watson. And we've seen that when it's a passing situation only for the Texans and you just start blitzing Watson from different angles, he hasn't done a very good job of picking it up.
Yeah, that's the big question this year is exactly how Deshaun Watson does pre-snap. Like when he really, really, really dissecting teams when they try to blitz. Like become that quarterback that you get nervous about blitzing because he can hurt you. Kiki QT does a lot for that. Kiki QT and his ability to get open quickly and be that option, get run after the catch when teams are blitzing, that helps a lot. Kiki QT's health might be the biggest X factor on this team. Because it's not even him actually being like, he doesn't need to be the best slot receiver in the league. He needs to be that little that little water bug option that helps open things up for an offense. Because all of a sudden, if Will Fuller's back at 95%, you've got your deep threat. And he's good underneath and he goes run, but he stretches the field, which helps DeAndre Hopkins out. And then if you have Kiki QT, okay, all of a sudden, when you're rotating safeties over to help out versus DeAndre Hopkins, that's extra room run after the catch room for Kiki QT.
He lets the offense breathe.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
He relieves a little of the pressure on the offensive line because of how quickly he can get open. And when I look at this schedule, here's my biggest thought this morning. If you are a Texans fan who is not happy with the state of the franchise and you feel like there's been a lot of mediocrity, you might not be thrilled with Bill O'Brien, which I think is probably maybe the majority of the fan base right now, or they're not fully bought in, you should love this schedule, and I will tell you why. Because you're going to know exactly where this franchise stands after facing all of these teams.
Yeah.
So if you have doubts about Bill O'Brien, if you want to see Watson get better, if you want to say, okay, you want to figure out where does this roster stack up with the class of the NFL, you should be thrilled with this schedule because you will know by December 30th, after these 16 games, exactly where this Texans team and coaching staff stands.
I think that's a great point because it's Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson versus a bunch of other good quarterbacks. Teams, like, predicting how good a schedule is going to be in any given year is really, really hard to do. The important thing about this schedule that you're looking at for the Texans is that there are a bunch of good quarterbacks on the other side of the stadium. And those guys, like, good quarterback play is good quarterback play. Guys don't fluctuate too much from year to year. If you're one of the better quarterbacks in the league, usually you're going to be pretty good in any given year. You can expect the Texans are going to face good quarterback play. So it becomes, can Deshaun Watson and Bill O'Brien outplay and outmaneuver those other good quarterbacks? If they can, I'm going to feel as good about this Texans team, like, moving forward into the future, no matter what happens in the playoffs this year, as I have in a long time. And I'll actually feel better about Bill O'Brien than I have since he's been here.
Yes.
And I hope that's the way I feel. I think it's possible. It's just we find out a lot about Bill O'Brien this year.
There's been such a drought of big wins. And I think that's one of the issues that we have in this city right now is that from a fan standpoint, you can't look at, right now, objectively, it's hard to look back the last couple of years and say, well, you know, at least they beat this team. At least they beat that team. They've come close. They almost beat the Patriots. They almost beat the Seahawks. They almost won some of these games, but they didn't quite get it done. With this schedule, you have so many opportunities to get the kind of wins that will get people to actually buy into this football team.
I wasn't listening to our draft special last night because I had something going on. Or excuse me, our schedule special. What did Rich Lord predict the Texans would be?
He thought they would go 8-1 down the stretch.
And go 11-5 overall.
Yeah, that was my question. 11-5 overall?
Yes.
Has anybody else been that high?
Not that I've seen so far. Rich Lord, 11-5.
What's Vandy predicted?
We're
going to have him in here tomorrow.
18-0.
There's something that Vandy said that kind of blew my mind yesterday. And I'm actually a little bit nervous to bring it up on the air because this is going to sound like this is some sort of like insult or something. But it's really not meant to be. So I'm at a drive-thru last night because I made some poor food choices last night for whatever reason. And I'm sitting at this drive-thru and I'm listening to Mark and he said that for him, the London game against Jacksonville, there's a little bit more to it for him because Mark was born in Europe. This take surprised me.
How long did he live over there?
I don't know if he lived there much. I think, and Mark will be in here tomorrow at this time, at 8 o'clock hour.
He was born in Europe.
He was born in the Netherlands, I think. Jonesy, is that right? Somewhere around there? Vanderbilt.
All right, now we get into that whole Netherlands, Dutch, Belgium conundrum I can never figure out. All right. He was one of those three things.
I think
he was two of those three things.
If I'm not mistaken, the Dutch and the British were cool, like back in like the 1600s and 1700s because of the whole Protestant nature of both of their countries.
I'm just fascinated because I too, like Mark, I was also born in Europe. If the station sends me to cover this game in London,
Russia.
I'm not going to.
Russia's
exactly,
not Europe.
Well,
Russia's Russia. Russia's it's part
like,
of Europe, but it's Russia.
You're Asian.
I'm not Asian.
You're half Asian.
No, you're Asian.
I'm not Asian.
No. I'm saying the word Eurasian. It's considered Eurasian.
You're half Europe.
You're like half Asia. Yeah, it's
okay.
Europe and Asia.
I was born on the same continent as London is, I think.
You're an Asian, actually.
Like continents are.
Nope, you're an Asian, and it's so weird with your
races.
Let me get to the point.
You're a Eurasian.
Let me get to the point. My point is, if the station sent me to cover the London game in the London game against the Jaguars, I would not go into that game thinking, you know what? This game means more to me working because I was born in Europe. I just found it to be a really interesting take by Mark, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around it.
Well, his parents maybe. Maybe it matters for his parents. Maybe his parents were like NFL fans back in the day, like the like one of the few NFL. Maybe they moved to America because of the NFL, and now it's a return. It'd be now, like going back to Ireland.
Maybe Mark,
because now there's potatoes.
Maybe Mark was actually born in England, in which case I think this actually makes a lot more sense. So we'll find out tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Time now.
Sounds like a big old heaping pile of white privilege to me is what it sounds like.
Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Thursday. Time now for Med Takes. Rob Gronkowski has left his mark. He has dented the latest Vince Lombardi trophy. Apparently, Gronk took the Lombardi to a Red Sox game, and he was joking. He was kind of like joking around about using the trophy like as a bat, except he actually squared around to bunt a warm-up pitch from Julian Edelman, which left a dent in the trophy. The Patriots said, right now, they're going to keep the dent and tell the story.
It's actually a pretty nice dent. It's like, it's symmetrical.
It gives a
it's
character.
It's kind of smooth. It at least tells a story of, like, why this trophy is different from any of these other trophies they've got lined up there. And frankly, the whole ordeal has sickened me. I watched a few different videos. The Patriots put a funny little video out, making like, kind of, like, mocking it like it was a tragic moment or something. The fact that they can have a Super Bowl trophy and treat it so frivolously.
Yeah, we got five just, more.
They're punting baseballs with it.
Like, what That's a great point.
What the hell? They don't even give a damn.
Punting
yeah,
baseballs.
Exactly. Like, they're probably going to give it, they'll just give it to Gronk as a going away present. You can keep that trophy, have it in a chain around your neck. And, it just, I don't know. There's nothing I can do about it.
You should make one of them look different. I mean, at this point, they all look exactly the same. You want them to stand out. You don't want to confuse them. Just silver trophies. They look exactly the same.
It's a nice dent.
It is a nice dent. But can I also say this? Were you kind of surprised at the flimsiness of the trophy? It's not like Edelman was throwing heat or anything. He was just kind of lobbing a ball in this little canvas tent that was set up. And Gronkowski bunted with it, and it was enough to leave it. Those things look a lot more solid than they actually are. It's kind of like when some of these statues that have gotten torn down over the last couple of years, they like crumple into aluminum foil when they hit the ground. What the hell is that thing made out of?
That's a great question, Seth. Do we believe that it was a bunt? Do we believe that this is the cover-up, that it was a bunt and he actually swung it like it was a baseball bat?
Someone's got to have video of this somewhere. I haven't seen it in the story that I clicked on last night, but someone's got to have video of this whole deal.
Oh, no, there is. I just told you. I watched a video of it.
Oh, you watched
it? Yeah, there's a big video of Gronk dancing afterwards. He's obviously drunk as hell. Edelman tried to throw a pitch earlier, and it, like, careened. It must have came out of his hand. He almost brained somebody standing on the side. It was a weird little setup. They were throwing pitches in this tent, and I don't understand why. It was like this long tent, and it was a weird situation. I don't know. It's a cult up there. I don't know what they do. You know what? I'm going to do a different mad take. Mike, why is Europe and Russia Asia? That's one big damn landmass. I remember learning about this. That's why you call it the Eurasian landmass. Like, Asia and Europe are not any different. They're just separated by some mountains here or there.
Yes.
That's some damn you know what that is? That's racially based. That's somebody back in the day who was like, no, we're Europeans, and those hordes over there are Asians. That's not us. Look at it. Look at it.
I'm looking at
Wyatt,
it. Yes.
Tell me how Europe and Asia are not the same landmass.
I mean, they seem to be, I guess.
What is the same damn landmass?
Seven votes for the poll that I put up. At Gallant says, Mike Meltzer is Russian, but is he European? 29%. You're Asian, 71%. Asian, 0%.
Yeah.
I really wanted people to say Asian because of Mike's disdain for Asians.
Real estate Asians?
Yeah.
He hates real estate
Asians.
He
hates real estate Asians.
He's like,
so much.
These guys are the worst real estate Asians in the land.
I just did a search on this. So there is a European Russia, which is the western part of the Russian Federation, and it does include St. Petersburg, Moscow. I was born in
St.
Petersburg.
Yeah, but that's nonsense. It should all be Asia or Eurasia. Like, Europe and Asia are the same damn landmass. If you were starting from scratch,
yes.
If you just flew in from outer space and you're like, oh, we have to name landmasses here, well, that big chunk of one right there, like, that's what should we name that? And somebody's gonna be like, no, that's actually two. And you're like, what the hell are you talking about, you stupid earthling? That's one big landmass right there.
So we gotta
combine
it.
Like, if I go from Spain over here to Japan over here, that's one big chunk of land. And the only difference is that the people on the left there, like, got to say what was what. That's one big land. You're Asian, damn it. And so, you know what? You know who else is Asian?
Who?
Spanish folks, French folk, all of it. You go with the bigger size mass and it's Asia. All of Europe is Asia. And it's a bunch of snobbery and racism that's making them. That's right, racist. That's right. That's right. You racist SOBs. You're all Asian.
Africa's touching Asia, so is Africa really Asia, which is really Europe?
No, no, no. It's a separate landmass, though. You look at it like that's a different huge chunk. They might be they're not touching either. They're separated by like the Suez and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, they're a man-made separation.
A Suez reference on Mad Radio.
Well, no, but it's not. No, the Suez Canal is part of anyway. yeah, like North and South America connected, but it's obviously a different landmass.
It's the same landmass. It's all Pangea, actually.
All right, here's the thing. If you live in a specific area code, in Houston, or not an area code, a specific zip code in Houston, you're now going to be able to get groceries delivered to you by Kroger's autonomous delivery vehicles. They've got these Priuses that are going to be self-driving cars within a specific area code. They're going to extend it down to Buffalo Speedway, too. But it's shoppers at Kroger's Meyerland stores who live in zip codes 77401 and 77096 can order groceries through the company's website and have their purchases pull up in a self-driven Prius. Frankly, this surprised me. This shocked me. I didn't know we were this close to it. They've been doing this in Arizona, and apparently it went really well. I would imagine it has to be one area code just because they need to be very, very certain about like all the road closures and everything in an area. I'm excited about this. Are you guys close to these area codes, either of you?
I don't live in Meyerland, so no.
Okay.
So no, I'm not.
Oh, no, you're definitely not. You're Midtown. Yeah.
Yes.
Paul, you're close to one. I would imagine there's grocery wars going on. Everybody's all hyper-competitive these days. I would imagine H-E-B and the other stores are going to be... Like
Buffalo Speedway ones,
yeah.
Because I go to the HEB on Buffalo Speedway.
The HEB on the Kroger on Buffalo Speedway is going to have it.
It's
soon.
Open 24 hours that Kroger on Buffalo Speedway. But I've gone to HEB so much I go into Kroger and I get lost. I remember I went in there one day. It's like, oh, I just need one thing, and I'm pretty sure they have it because they have more things there. And I was walking around for 25 minutes, couldn't find it.
Grocery stores are unique in that you do find your spot, and you're like, I'm comfortable with everything is. Then you go to another one, and you're like, this is not something is the sweet whatever is screwed
Holy
up.
Crap! Wait, Europe and Asia are on different tectonic plates. Apparently,
is that where the caucus is?
You guys can come at me with that, but tectonic plate theory wasn't even accepted until a few decades ago. That's not like the distinction was made in the somebody back in the 1600s wasn't like, well, there's probably tectonic plates underneath us, so Europe is Europe and Asia is Asia. Go screw yourselves with your tectonic plates, acting like that's the reason that people called Europe Europe and Asia Asia. That's one of the most nonsensical, stupid things I've ever heard.
Seth Payne has been defeated by 8th grade earth science on a Thursday.